we're trying to preserve culture and curate and amplify heritage. So to do that, we're not just a museum with artifacts. We want this to live. We want it to evolve.
Hello and welcome to the Mayman Show. On the occasion of Arab News' special coverage for the fifth anniversary for the Diriyya Gate Development Authority, today we have the Chief Marketing Officer for DGDA, Mr. Kiran Haslam. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and before we start everything, I mean, how does it feel to be part of the fifth anniversary for one of the most intriguing projects in Saudi?
Amazing. And I think that it's such an interesting milestone. It's a milestone that we want to shout about to each other in the office, more so than outside the office. You know, DGDA has such a unique workplace. We were recently recognized as one of the best places to work in the kingdom, which is incredible, but sort of not a surprise because of the way in which we cooperate with each other and interact with each other, which is really refreshing and really dynamic. And there's a lot of energy. Sometimes there's a lot of excitement, you know, and it can all concertina up and then relax a bit. But what's really great, I not wanting to name brands, I will say that I have visited the Google offices, right. And they have a reputation for having a very open, exciting, and dynamic workplace where people enjoy themselves. And that crossover point of where it's work and where it's just how we want to live, it's blurred.
All right.
And I think that DGA is just like Google in that regard, with a lot less beanbags around the office. As Google, of course, as you know, is famous for having beanbags everywhere. So our spines are all straight because we're sitting on good chairs, and we're still able to interact in that kind of positive manner. So to be at five years, I mean, I haven't been there for 5 years, but I feel like I have sometimes because of the openness and the transparency that the organization has.
All right. And aside from having a good spine and a unique working environment, what makes, you know, the Diriyya project unique in its own right as a whole?
The project is, I think, something so magnificent because it's almost all of the little assets that we're creating for what is ostensibly a city in Riyadh, you know, Diriyya, we're creating mixed use assets, and historically people have talked about it almost from a development perspective only, which is, you know, the 5-star hotels and the academies and university concepts and all of the stuff which creates a way to live inside a city within the capital city, which is Riyadh City. It's sort of the humanity which is linking all of the projects, all of those assets, all of those locales and initiatives. And the entire project in itself is human scale. So it's all in reference to Najdi architecture. Right. It's all Adobe Construct. And, you know, we've created 180 million mud bricks thus far to create the first phase of Diriyya.
To replicate the feel.
To replicate the feel of At-Turayf, absolutely. And it's all you know, underpinned by what At-Turayf is, you know, this incredible citadel from 1700, which was just a place to be inspired, you know. And so the 180 mud bricks that we're doing to sort of replicate and amplify the spirit and the meaning of At-Turayf and the significance of At-Turayf going outwards to form Diriyya, the city that we're building. You know, to give you a little idea, 180 million mud bricks, if you stack them end to end, it's 3.7 times longer than the Great Wall of China. So it's a big project. It's a complex project, but it's one which is always rooted in sort of humanity and culture and interaction.
Okay.
And so that's, I think that's what really sets the Diriyya project apart. You know, a lot of these assets are almost, they are all important, equally so, but in many respects to the human proposition, to the interaction proposition, to the culture proposition, they are almost sort of byproducts. They're just sort of course they need to be there in order to fulfill this quality of life, this pedestrian living. And so, that's it. I think that's what sets us apart.
Okay. So, you know, let's dive in a bit more to the pedestrian aspect. Like, how is this project going to be more of a pedestrian meaningful project?
So, you know, a couple of decades ago, there was a movement from pretty respected chefs all across the world, and more so in Europe, where they had this whole slow food idea, right? Mm-hmm. You know, in the antithesis to fast food, the idea that you can slow down, you can have quality food, you can cook together, you can eat together, you can share plates. You know, the idea was not so much on the food; it was more about the connectivity, the human element around food, right? And the enjoyment of food, which is fundamentally what we do. It's why we love to go to restaurants, right?
Yeah, I love food. So
and the sharing of it, you know, when you taste something, you go, oh my gosh, that is incredible. You want, you know, your sister, your mother, your wife, your, you know, your friend to try it. Try that, you know, it's, oh my gosh, it's incredible. And that concept was sort of lost because we were sort of the industrialization of how we enjoyed food. So, you know, in much the same way, if you take that slow food concept, we're sort of taking it from a cultural perspective, right? Mm-hmm. The preservation of Saudi culture, the preservation of Saudi history, and the values underpinning that, the lessons that we want to take and amplify forward to the future. You know, there's an opportunity to just slow down a little bit and savor it, just enjoy it, understand it, mm-hmm. let it breathe so that you can feel it and contextualize it and use it. And so the idea of being pedestrian, you do that. You know, it's hard to have a very engaging experience. I often use the example of a great city like Barcelona, where you'll walk around and you'll be pedestrian, cobblestone alleyway, you'll turn and there's this incredible artist doing an incredible performance and it's incredibly moving. It's very, very hard to pull up to the curb in your car, jump out, go and have that moving experience, jump back into your car and drive off again.
Yes.
Right. So to get these meaningful, engaging experiences, you also have to pedestrianize and you have to slow down and you have to be eye to eye or ear to ear or shoulder to shoulder and you have to have these moving exchanges.
All right.
And the promise of the Dureya project is we have gone subterranean in our infrastructure so that we can take some of the road links, some of the more obvious elements of city life, which may not be as savory. You know, no one ever wants to have to constantly think you're holding your little six-year-old's hand and you want to make sure that, you know, he or she is not going in the way of a passing car or a truck or whatever it might be. And so we're taking all of those elements of city life, going subterranean, mm-hmm. and then we have a walkable pedestrian city. And this rings out from the origins of At-Turayf as well. You know, if you walk through At-Turayf and you experience Salwa Palace and go behind it and around the little citadel, you know, you've got that feeling. You know, everything's a little bit closer in proximity. Everything's a little bit slower. So the Dureya idea is, you know, when you need to go to your office and you need 30 minutes to get to your office, well, you might leave 45 minutes ahead of schedule because you'll probably encounter someone along the way walking alongside you or walking in the opposite direction. And you may stop and have a conversation. You may stop and have a coffee, you know, and it's that kind of exchange where it's a unique proposition because it not only preserves culture, it amplifies that interaction between people and therefore amplifies cultural exchange as well.
Okay. And basically, how do you feel that this human element will add to the uniqueness of the project?
Well, so, I mean, you can always make Disneyland. Right?
Okay.
You can always create an attraction and there's a place for that. There's a place for that for sure. You want to go there and it's an Instagrammable moment. You want to take a picture and you want to remember it and you want to talk about it and share it. I think when you have a really meaningful exchange, it has such huge ramifications on who you are. You think about that. You think about that person. So maybe you went to the office a bit earlier, you stumbled across such and such and you had a conversation. Such and such says something.
Okay.
And you're in your office doing your everyday thing, but you're thinking about that or it resonates in a different way in the context of what you've got to do that day. And I think that's the personality behind things. And personality really goes a long way. And that it's that personal moment. It's that human interaction. It's the origin story for, you know, legends being passed down from grandmother to grandson, you know.
Okay.
It's that oratory, you know, transition as well. And that's where the human element is so really important.
All right. And, you know, Dureya will be open for tourists pretty soon. I believe, what year is it scheduled in your...
So we'll be opening At-Turayf to the public in September.
Okay.
To be honest, we're sort of in the soft opening. So there are a lot of people who are coming through at the moment and getting to experience it. But At-Turayf is so important to us. It is the it is sort of like the linchpin at the heart of the Dareya project. It's why we exist. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to when the Banu Hanifa tribe settled in Wadi Hanifa, what that meant, the agricultural society, the citadel of Atureif that then transpired. Going back to that time, you know, in we're talking about 1700, 1727.
Okay.
And you've got a situation where to the left-hand side of Salwa Palace was the first treasury in the Arabian Peninsula.
Okay.
To the right-hand side was the second largest mosque in the Arabian Peninsula. And behind Salwa Palace was a school for both male and female students. And that was, you know, a school of mathematics and astronomy. And again, that's, you know, going back to 1700. And that means something to us. That means something. And I think in the, when you contextualize it in modern day, today's, you know, Saudi Arabia, I think there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of anchoring values and culture. You know, if you have a look at the great imams from the history of Atureif and some of the really symbolic moments that were made and gestures that were conducted, and you know, you talk about unity and justice and peace, and you know, there are all of these really important elements that I think come forward in time. And so we'll open up Atureif. You'll be able to come through, you'll be able to explore.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting because we're trying to preserve culture and curate and amplify heritage. So to do that, we're not just a museum with artifacts. We want this to live. We want it to evolve. So we've got a really incredible way to bring that history, which has been so predominantly oratory in the kingdom, to bring it back to life, to impart it. So you'll meet people, you'll encounter people, you'll see things and you'll feel things through Atureif, which I think are very important to see.
Okay. And, you know, getting back to, you know, you said pride is a huge factor of this project, and you know how Atureif is the heart of Dareya, and Dareya is actually the heart of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. It's the founding home of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. In your opinion, I mean, there's lots of tourism development projects with rich history and culture, but what makes developing the founding home of the kingdom so unique?
The stories are remarkable.
Yeah.
The history is remarkable. You scratch your head, and even if you've looked into some of the stories and some of the history, even if you've visited Atureif, you know, what you're really looking at when you realize it, when you see it, and when you feel it. I mean, there's a warmth to the place. There's a generosity to it. Just aesthetically, there's a generosity to it. I think it's obvious. It's an ecological city as well, being of mud brick construction. And there's an important element of sustainability, which just sort of rings true there, right? Yeah. When you look at these ecological cities of the future, and you know, there are places that are using mud brick construction in Switzerland now, looking at a forward-thinking view of construction, thermal efficiency, and architecture. That was there 300 years ago, right? And there's a warmth to it. So you almost everyone does this. They want to touch the wall, you know, when they walk past Salwa Palace or walk down one of the walkways. You just want to, it's tactile.
Yeah. I mean, I personally want to do the same thing when I see it. Just to get the just feel. Just to touch it. Just to understand what it was like.
What does that feel like?
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's true also for the stories, for the history. You, because of that tactility, you feel like you want to get more of that out. Mm-hmm. And so you do. And it's surprising. I was so surprised to understand so much about the history. And we've got incredible historians. And I'm very fortunate that sometimes I can ask a question to his Excellency Dr. Al-Samari and get an answer. You know, who greater to give me an answer on the history of Atureif? You know, so I can tap into some of this information, and I'm just blown away. And I think when people start traveling into Atureif from further afield, certainly in the kingdom, when people go to visit us, I think they're going to see something so unique and so special, and it's very moving, and it's very warm, and it's very magical. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's something which is really incredible.
Okay, so you know, aside from I guess, you know, being in the soft launch phase and opening up in September, what can we expect from, you know, Dareya Gate Development Authority in the future?
So immediately following Atureif opening, we will open Matal al-Bujairi.
All right.
So Matal al-Bujairi is a really wonderfully designed for a really enjoyable time out, whether that's a daytime or an evening. or an early evening thing. It's a place where families can gather, friends can gather. We've got an incredible selection of famous chefs and Michelin restaurants. We've got more accessible, everyday, just drop-in, casual dining kind of outlets and coffee shops. We've got a lot of entertainment on offer as well. Mm-hmm. And you're overlooking a Touareg beautifully lit in the evening. And you've got access down into Wadi Hanifa as well. So there's a lot that people can see, and that's going to be as well this year. So mm-hmm. after we open Atoreif and you've started to go through Atoreif, you'll be able to pop across the bridge near the Ministry of Culture and then go and explore Matal al-Bujeri, meet with friends, have a great meal. We've got some outstanding restaurants that are there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're famous or small, they've been handpicked and selected because of what they offer and their outlook on what they want to do with unique dishes that you'll only find here in Dereya, you know, and unique ingredients. And so so that's next. And then there's just so much more. We've got a plan to really bring some of the mixed elements and assets to life, you know, in terms of engaging with great media outlets such as yourselves, and in terms of engaging with great, you know, academics and academies and programs and universities. And there's just a lot that's happening. There's a whole residential and commercial offering as well. So we'll have incredible, you know, high quality office space, incredible homes, you know, where you might choose to live yourself.
I'd be more than happy to.
You know? So, and again, pedestrian, right? So it may not be for everyone, but it's for someone who recognizes that that quality and wants that particular quality of life. No. There are people who want a unique quality of life and some who want a different kind of a unique quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And we've sort of seen and sort of tested out and tested the waters, so to speak, on what the proposition of Dereya is. And we're super excited.
Okay. And when you say soon, when can we expect soon to be, like, towards, like, let's say December or
so for Matal al-Bujeri? I think that we're going to see a lot of visitors having a really, really good time between September and November as we start to open up and invite all of the visitors through. So by the end of this year, I think there'll be a real feeling of what the promise of Dereya is, and a lot of excitement that we're open.
All right.
And at that moment in time, we'll be offering opportunities to come to our visitor centers and our welcome centers and understand the full range of the entire Dereya project.
Right.
And we're still on course to deliver that project as per the original plans. And so you'll start to see year after year, you'll see groundbreakings and assets opening. You'll see opportunities to, on a Thursday evening, call your friends or go with your family and say, let's head down to Dereya and have a look and have a walk around and have a great meal and a moving experience.
Sounds interesting. Who knows? Maybe we can replace the studio and record in Dereya as well. So
why don't we? Why not? I tell you, let's do that. When we open Touareg, maybe we should do a special broadcast from Touareg.
Oh, I'll be more than happy to come. I'll take you up on that invitation, by the way.
Done. It's done.
All right. So, I've done, you know, some research before, you know, we met and everything about you. And you have a very interesting background. And you've worked with lots of luxury brands, you know, from automotive to yachting and everything. So, you know, what makes Dereya as a project similar or different to your past experiences?
Well, okay, here's a strange thing, right? We've talked about slowing down in a pedestrian city.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the time it takes to engage culturally. One of the things that I realized on my journey working in luxury companies is luxury is not, it's not the detail work.
Yeah.
It's not the gold and diamonds and treatment. It's not the 0 to 100 kilometers an hour and 2.9 seconds. It's not that. It's time.
Okay.
You can appreciate all of those things because obviously when you're talking about high luxury and the detail it takes to create a fabulous watch or an amazing, you know, handmade item, of course it takes time to do that detail work.
Yeah.
But if I spoke to anyone who was enjoying our products or services, they all said to me, do you know what, Kieran, the big trouble I have, that the number one luxury in the world is actually just time. Time to switch off and enjoy something. Time to get away from work, to get away from, you know, the business element and to connect. And those times are few and far between for a lot of the most powerful people in the world. So they really appreciate it. And that has sort of dictated the shape of luxury.
Yeah.
Ironically, we're talking about delivering that same luxury of time to everyone.
Okay.
From all walks of life, from all ages, when you talk about the Dorea Project. So there's some interesting kind of similarities between the two propositions in a strange kind of obtuse way.
Okay.
But I've enjoyed the transition and the change from that world to this world, probably because of one thing. I think if I'm really honest, I probably love cars and classic cars.
Yeah,
and,
makes two of us.
Cars in general. Yeah. I probably love them too much to work in the car industry.
For real?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Uh-huh. But what I've come to realize is that's because I think I've found something here with my time in the Dorea Project and what we're doing. Where I don't think you can love it that much that you can't be in the in the industry. So all right. Because it's all about people and it's all about humanity and it's all about these connections. So.
Okay, and since you love cars, if the Dorea Project was a classic car, what would it be to you?
Oh, that's really a great question. That's a great question. Someone at Bentley who knows me would get really upset with me if I didn't say Bentley.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna make them upset, I'm sure. I think it would have to be a large car because it's one where it's all about, you know, being together.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the interesting thing about cars is I love cars, but perhaps my wife doesn't love them equally. So she loves boats. And the reason is that when you get on a boat, you can be with family.
Okay.
And it's all about that.
Yeah.
In a car, it's really just a pleasure for the person who's behind the wheel with their foot on the pedal.
Yeah,
everyone
exactly.
else is nervous.
Yeah.
So anyone else who's in the car is nervous. So so I think it would have to be a really, really big big car where it's not about going fast. It's about enjoying it. So perhaps it is a Bentley in that regard. Not from a price tag perspective. Of course, it could be from a price tag perspective sometimes. But it's more about just getting in and being relaxed and enjoying the ride.
Sounds interesting. I mean, with me, it would be a 1956 Chevrolet Corvette.
Okay.
I love those cars.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's like a masterpiece.
Yes, it is. It is, definitely.
No, right.
I agree with you. Special car, special place, special moment in time and in history.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, you're an anthropologist. You've done a lot of unique things in life, aside from marketing. You know, let's tap into that a bit. So, you know, you've authored two children's books.
Yeah, just by sheer... encountering it, really. I mean,
really? How did that happen? Like,
do you want to know the real story?
Of course.
The real story of how this happened was I wanted to do a campaign which spoke to people for a extremely high-end niche luxury product. And I wanted to engage on a very human level.
All right.
Whenever you see photographs of luxury items and you see like a family dinner or something like that, it's all curated. There's a full glass of orange juice where the six-year-old boy is seated. There's no crumbs or spaghetti sauce on the tablecloth. It's all contrived.
All right.
And I wanted to break that. And I wanted to be real. And I wanted to make things as if you've just walked into a great Italian family dinner and there's stains on the tablecloth and, you know, little Giacomo has dropped his you know, the meatballs
on
the floor and the dog's eating it at that moment in time. And, you know, that's real.
That's right? real, yeah.
And you feel it.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you're presenting somebody to something to someone that you want them. You feel like you're drawing them into the picture.
Okay.
So it was the same kind of an idea. And I wanted to have a really great campaign where it was a father reading a bedtime story to his children on a luxury yacht.
Okay.
Extremely high price tag luxury yacht.
Okay.
And I wanted to make it very real. And interestingly, I'm a huge fan of Dr. Zeuss.
Right.
A lot of people mispronounce it as Dr. Zeus, but it's actually Dr. Zeuss.
Right.
And I'm a huge fan of Dr. Zeuss because of the lyricism and the rhythm that he used. And it was poetry, you know, it was poetry for kids and it was accessible and memorable. And so I wanted to take this Dr. Zeuss book and have the father reading to the children.
Okay.
And then I found out how crippling financially it would have been to obtain just a flat image of the Dr. Zeuss book.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I don't want to spend that money on an incidental book. That book means something to me. But how about I just make a mock-up book so that we can utilize that for the ad campaign? That's actually how it started. From the mock-up book, I just had an idea. And I was on a flight. I was flying to Miami, and I put a set of headphones on and listened to some to some Brazilian music. Okay. And I thought about the underwater world, and I started writing, and it just went from there. And I literally wrote the first book in probably about 40 minutes.
Okay.
And then just sort of worked on it and tweaked it a little bit. And I thought about the direction of travel, and I thought about the values of what I was trying to say to children,
mm-hmm.
and the values of the environment. I'm hugely aware that we have a lot of work to do as society, okay. global society, to look after the planet. I think everybody's starting to catch on now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of where it originated. Okay. And then the second book came out as sort of a second
edition,
interpretation of that of those lessons, and to focus a little bit more on things like plastic and the ocean environment.
All right. So you'd say the moral of these books is, you know, for the next generation to be more environmentally aware of taking care of, you know, nature.
Definitely, definitely. And also female empowerment, I think. Okay. That was really on my mind at that time. My daughter was getting a little bit older, and I wanted to make sure, you know, she's an incredible personality, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was establishing a world of equality where she could have everything that I had, you know.
Okay.
And so I made the main character of the books a little girl based on her,
mm-hmm.
and based on my grandmother, who was a very powerful figure in my life, and named it after my grandmother, and went from there.
That's pretty interesting. Aside from the books, you know, I mean, this is just to show you're a man of many talents and like to dabble in different things. You know, you're also a musician and a composer.
Yeah.
I think your master's is also in guitar, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
right?
Well, you have done your homework.
Yeah, of course. I mean, everybody that sits on my table, I mean, I have to know everything about before we talk.
You know, I never studied music. I always mm-hmm. just picked it up by ear.
All right.
I started playing guitar when I was bass guitar when I was about 9. And electric guitar and acoustic guitar when I was about 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just drawn to it.
Whoa.
I just...
What got you into it?
I
mean, you're talking to somebody that loves rock, you know. So
yeah.
Like,
okay.
I can listen to
Jimi Hendrix.
Voodoo Child.
Yes.
I love that song. Yeah. I can listen to it over and over again.
Jimi Hendrix got me into it. And the actual song that got me into Jimi Hendrix was All Along the Watchtower.
Yeah.
And it was a cassette that I had been given by my uncle.
Mm-hmm.
I was 9 years old. I remember what was on both sides clearly. On one side, it had Jimi Hendrix. And on the other side, it had the Rolling Stones and three songs by the Doors.
Okay.
And the Jimi Hendrix, he gave me this cassette. I thought I was top of the world.
Okay.
The cassette was a chrome cassette. But on Walkmans back then,
mm-hmm.
you had a tab. Which was for a regular cassette
uh-huh.
or a chrome cassette.
Correct. Right?
Because chrome is a harder strip, and mm-hmm. therefore the playhead had to adjust up just incrementally.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a Walkman, which had a chrome setting. So that was my mission as of that moment in time, because I had this chrome cassette and I was so proud of it, but I didn't have a Walkman that could play on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to this song and I thought it was incredible. So I spoke to my uncle about it. I said, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
What is he doing? How's he getting that sound? You know,
yeah.
I thought guitar was strumming, not this. This was alive. This was tapping into.
Making a guitar sound like two guitars at once.
Yeah, well, you know? It was even more than that. And he grabbed me by the shoulder and he said, you know what? You see this guy play. His fingers are rolling like lizards. And that description just captivated me. Fingers rolling like lizards mm-hmm. on a guitar. And he said to me, you know, if you, he's talking, call me Kiri Boy. He said, Kiri Boy, if you can play anything that this guy can play, that's it. You've done it.
Oh, you've won his respect.
So I set about doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my mission.
Okay.
And in those days, we didn't have YouTube and we didn't have all of the technology that
mm-hmm.
the youth of today has to learn and discover and do things. So I had obtained a Jimi Hendrix record from a library.
Interesting.
And I was slowing the record down with the bottom of the palm of my hand. So I could hear the separation of the notes.
Uh-huh.
Then I'd learn them as on the bottom of the fretboard.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'd let go and it would speed up, it'd be, and I'd move it up until I could find that. That was the adversity we had back then as musicians to learn how to play.
And before we wrap up this interview, is there a message you want to tell to our Arab News audience?
message in terms of what, like a Kieran wise words of wisdom?
Yeah. I mean, you're an interesting character. You know, before we wrap up, they need to tap into your mindset.
So let me say this. Firstly, anyone wants to connect up with me, find me on LinkedIn, reach out to me and say hi. Right. Okay. And I'm more than happy to interact with as many people in this world as I possibly can, because you can learn something from anyone.
Of course.
Any walk of life, any age, a three-year-old can come over to you and teach you a valuable lesson. And so there's that. I think one of the things that I learned is definitely I live this philosophy. I do not take myself seriously, but I take everybody I encounter and everything I need to do very seriously.
Okay.
And if you get that balance right, it opens you up for self-reflection and change, and you don't get stuck in your ways. And I think that's a really valuable thing for people to consider. Some people have a lot of ego. Some people put a lot of fencing up, a lot of scaffolding up. And this is how I should be. Therefore, I will be like this at the cost of interacting with people who could really teach you something. And so that's that. And I think maybe finally, I think one of the things that is unique, and I encounter a few unique individuals who have a similar kind of a crazy moment like me.
I mean, you're looking at one, everyone thinks I'm a nutcase, so it's like,
I embrace it.
I love it. By the way, if someone tells me I'm polite and I'm nice, I kind of like just, I'm like,
really? Yeah, as long as it doesn't descend into Fight Club areas,
yeah, of
then,
course,
then
not.
You're
yeah,
open,
that's,
you're
that's
okay,
like,
you're okay.
You know, like, I think that's the cutoff area.
But I think rather than crazy, I think what it is this. I love chasing discomfort.
Yeah,
I really do.
I think that makes two of us.
I think when you get into a mode where it's every day, it becomes a bit blah blah, it becomes a bit bland, becomes a bit beige, and you want to sort of challenge yourself. You want to see what you can do.
Okay.
We've all got such a limited time to learn and to impart what we learn onto others and share what we learn with others. So for me, chase that discomfort. Do something you've never done before. See if you can give it a crack. And even if you don't make it, you tried, and whatever you learned from making it or not making it, you can apply in other spheres, and that's an important opportunity that we have as well.
All right, that's some solid advice, and I'd like to thank you for being with us on this episode. And before we wrap up, what you said just kind of reminds me of a quote I believe where it says, you know, life is a comedy, not a tragedy, but we take it seriously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's always room to expand, grow, and learn something when you don't take yourself seriously. And I think you're a true testament of that. I mean, if I could say I am too, but like I'm tooting my own horn by saying that, but we'll leave you.
You are too. See, I just tooted your horn. You are too.
Yeah. All right. It was a pleasure having you.
Absolutely.
And,
thank you very much.
I'd like to, you know, congratulate, you know, the Daria Gate Development Authority on its 5th year anniversary. Hopefully we can do this interview again in 10 years.
Yeah. Well, in any case, we're going to have you broadcasting from Otureif, aren't we?
Oh, so. Of course. Like I said, I'm taking you up on that offer.
Great. Excellent. And I welcome everybody to come and visit and drop me a line with your feedback on what you experience.
Great. Can't wait.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for being here. And that's all the time we have. Be sure to tune in to our next episode of The Mayman Show, and tune in to Arab News' special coverage for the 5th anniversary for the Daria Gate Development Authority. See you later.